Good morning, everyone. I hope you all had a very happy Christmas. And I wish you, every one of you, a happy new year. Welcome, everyone, whether you're joining us in church or whether you're joining us via the web camera. And this morning, as we begin our service, we remember that many Christians throughout the world are mourning the death of Pope Benedict XVI. We begin with our opening words. This morning is a gift. Every morning is a chance to begin again. Some days you do nothing. Some days you get lucky and the day shines on you. But how often do you seize the day with your hands and make it your own? This morning we wake to a new day and plan and make dreams. And as we live this day, may we be aware of all the people throughout the world, in cities, in deserts, on mountains and on plains, and remember that they are our brothers and our sisters. We light this chalice on the brink of a new year, letting go of what has been, open and hopeful for what may come, renewed, restored, ready to live fully. May we move forward with good intentions. We can't let our New Year light go out. So we're going to have our first hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 38, Morning Has Broken. Let us pray. Eternal Spirit, God of light and darkness, at this time of the year, when days are still short and nights are long, we take stock of life. As we reflect on success and defeat, allow us an awareness of the many blessings that are ours. Remind us of friends and family who remain steadfast and dear to us. Remind us to bundle together and keep warm within our family and community. Rejoice with us in our accomplishment and mourn with us in our losses. Help us to make workable resolutions and goals. Remind us of how our lives touch the lives of other people. Give us perspective on our priorities. Be with us as we render designs and draw blueprints for the year that is to come. Amen. Let us say together words that attempt to articulate the aims of our community. And these are in the back page of the hymn book. Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve mankind in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow in harmony with the divine, this do we covenant with each other and with God. I have a children's story, and this is, of course, for all the children here this morning. And it's a once upon a time story. Once upon a time, there was a man, and he had a business, and he had a family, and he was very happy. And he took out a loan with a very nasty loan shark. And he became ill, and for a while he couldn't work. So he fell into financial difficulties. And his family were wonderful. They tried to help him. But suddenly the day came when he realized, you know, it was really tough. He couldn't repay the loan. The loan shark not only was a shark in his business dealings, but he was a nasty person as well, and not even good looking. His daughter, on the other hand, was a beautiful young girl. And guess what? The nasty loan shark decided he would like to marry this man's daughter. And he went to the man and he asked him, you know, will you give me your daughter's hand in marriage? And he said, if you do, if I marry your daughter, I will write off the loan. And the man was thinking, no way would I want her marrying him. And he didn't want to be so blunt, so he said to him, you know, well, we'd have to give her some choice in the matter. And the man said, well, really, I'll tell you what we'll do, he said. We'll have a little gamble on it. He says, I'll put two stones in a bag, and she can pick out one of the stones. And if it's a white, we put a black one in and a white one. And if it's a black stone she picks out, she'll marry me, and I will write off your debt. But if she picks out the white stone, she's free not to marry me, and I'll still write off your debt. And when he was saying this, they were standing on a graveled path. That's where he got the idea of the stones. And they explained this to the daughter, and of course she's equally horrified at the thought of marrying this man. But she agreed to do it because she loved her father. And she noticed that when the loan shark bent down to pick stones off the gravel, took out a bag first, bent down to pick the stones, he picked two black stones up and put them in the bag. Not a black and white one, as he had said, but two black ones. She was terrified. What would she do? She was thinking, if I expose him, my father will still owe the money and we'll lose everything. And there's two black stones in it, so whichever I pick out is going to be a problem. I have to marry him. Not only was she beautiful, though, she was also very smart, and suddenly she had an idea. She was one of these people who could think outside the box. So what she did was, she said, oh, I am so excited. I'm really nervous about doing this. And she goes all shaky. I'm nervous about picking the stone out. And she put her hand into the bag, and it's shaking, and she takes out a stone. And she says, oh, I'm so nervous. And she threw the stone into the gravel. And the loan shark is going, you've just lost the stone. And she says, but it doesn't matter. I don't know which stone I picked out, but it doesn't matter because we can look at the stone that's still in the bag and we'll know the color the other stone was. And of course, when they looked at the stone in the bag, it was black. So she says, therefore, I obviously picked out the white one. And there it goes. She didn't have to marry him. And her father saved his business and didn't owe any money. And sometimes maybe at this time of the year when we're making our plans, let's not repeat the old stories every year where we plan to lose weight, get fitter, all that. Think outside the box, like that girl. So today is our favourite reading service, and I don't know how many readers we're going to get through. And if you volunteer to read and we don't get to you, my apologies. Just to remind our readers when they come up to remember to adjust the microphone to whatever level. And we begin with our first reader, who's Aidan.
Good morning to everyone. I would like to read a short piece by Tish Warren, who is a priest in the Anglican Church in North America, as well as an author and a columnist. The piece, I think, thoughtfully describes how the birth of Jesus, the story of the Word made flesh, interweaves all that is human and all that is divine, whatever you consider the divine to be. The piece was published last Sunday. It is entitled, "Did You Have a Hard Christmas? Jesus Did Too." Among my most treasured memories is one Christmas day when I was around 6 or 7 years old. Christmases in my childhood were fairly magical, with lots of good food, lots of family, parents, presents, and fun. But that Christmas, I was miserable. I lay in bed at my grandmother's house, where we went for our Christmas feast, with a big stomach bug, separated from the rest of the family so as not to spread my Yuletide germs. Alone and unable to eat, I listened sadly to the laughter and glee down the hall. Then my dad popped his head in the door. He brought me a ginger ale with a straw and sat at the end of the bed. He touched my forehead with the back of his hand to check my fever and joked with me kindly and gently. My father was a complicated man who kept to himself at home and was often distant. We knew he loved us, but he showed that more through mowing the lawn rather than giving us hugs or telling us so. But that morning, my father left the healthy people, the party, and the food and came to spend time with me, just me. I don't remember what gifts I got that year. I don't remember what decorations looked like or what food I missed out on. But I remember my father's face, his voice, his hands, his smile. It was my father's presence that transformed that childhood Christmas, giving it meaning beyond just misery, making it burn bright in my memory. This little moment was a tiny, imperfect picture to me of a kind of, as a child, of what Christians celebrate on Christmas morning in nearly every language around the globe. God, like my father, entered our room. The radical claim that Christians make is that God has not remained aloof, transcendent, resplendent in majesty and glory, but became one of us, to be with us in the finitude, the bewilderment, the loneliness, and the longing of being human. God identifies himself most with the hungry and the vulnerable, with those in chronic pain, with victims of violence, with the outcasts and the despised. In a poetic paraphrase of the scriptures, the pastor and theologian Eugene Peterson translates John chapter 1 by saying, The Word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. When Jesus, the Word, moved into the neighborhood, it was not into a posh house, but into a hard place. The hope of Christmas is that God did not, and therefore will not, leave us alone. In the midst of our doubts and sufferings comes a baby. Infinity dwindled to infancy, in the words of the poet Gerard Manley Hopkins. This child is God's embodied response to all of our human aching. In his book Unapologetic, Francis Spufford writes that Christians don't have an argument that solves the problem of the cruel word, but they do have a story. This story is one of God moving into the neighborhood.
Our next reader is Terry.
Good morning, everybody. I thought this time it would be nice to have a little bit of comedy, Christmas comedy. So this is a reading of the Nativity play, which is from Shirley Valentine by Willie Russell. Well, when our Brian learned he got the part of Joseph, he was made up with himself. All the time he's rehearsing this nativity play, his behaviour is fantastic. The headmaster is made up with him. I'm made up with him. The teachers are made up with him. And he's made up with himself. He's practising every night in his room.
We are weary travellers on our way to Bethlehem. And my wife is having a baby, and we need to rest at the inn for the night.
Well, on the day of the play, I got down to the school. The show started, and it was lovely, you know. All the little angels come on, and they all gave a sly little wave to their mams. Then it was our Brian's entrance, and he comes on pulling this donkey behind him. It was like an obby horse on wheels, and perched on the top of the donkey is the little girl who's playing the part of the Virgin Mary. Oh, and she's dressed up beautiful, you know. Her mother really had her dolled up to look the part. And she gives a little wave to her mum. Anyway, Brian gets to the door of the inn and he goes,
knock, knock, knock.
And the little fella, taking the part of the innkeeper, appears. And our Brian starts,
we are weary travellers on our way to Bethlehem, and my wife is having a baby. And we need to rest at the inn for the night.
Then the little innkeeper says,
well, you can't stay at the inn, because we is full up. There is no room at the inn.
And then our Brian is supposed to say something like,
well, we will go and find a lowly cattle shed and stay there instead.
But he didn't. Well, I don't know if it was the Virgin Mary getting up our Brian's nose, because she spent the entire scene waving to her mother, or whether he just realised that the part of Joseph wasn't all it was cracked up to be. But whatever it was, instead of going off pulling the Virgin Mary and the donkey behind him, he turned to the little innkeeper and roared, "Full up! Full up! But we booked!" Well, the little innkeeper didn't know what day of the week it was, and he's looking round the hall, trying to find someone to come and rescue him. And our Brian's going, "Full up! Listen, I have the wife outside waiting on the donkey. She's expecting a baby any moment now. And there's snow everywhere in 6-foot drifts. And you're telling me you're full up?" Well, the innkeeper's lip is beginning to tremble. And the Virgin Mary's in floods of tears on the back of the donkey. Finally, the little innkeeper realises that the script is well out the window, and he has to do something about our Brian. So he steps forward and says,
"Listen, mate, listen, I was only joking. We have room, really. You can come in if you want."
And with that, the three of them disappeared into the inn. End of nativity play. And the end of our Brian's acting career. Me and our Brian, we sometimes laugh at it now. But at the time, I could have died of shame. It was all over the papers. Mary and Joseph failed to arrive in Bethlehem. Eh, I was that ashamed.
Elaine has a reading for us.
Morning, everyone. So for my very short piece, it's something that was read as the introduction to a yoga nidra in my yoga class a couple of weeks ago, and I thought it fits today perfectly. I hope you agree. It's by F. Scott Fitzgerald. "For what it's worth, it's never too late, or in my case, too early, to be whoever you want to be. There's no time limit. Stop whenever you want. You can change or stay the same. There are no rules to this thing. We can make the best or the worst of it. I hope you make the best of it. And I hope you see things that startle you. I hope you feel things you've never felt before. I hope you meet people with a different point of view. I hope you live a life you're proud of. And if you find you're not, I hope you have the courage to start all over again."
Shari is going to play for us now, so relax and enjoy this.
Thank you.
Now can we have our second hymn this morning, and it's hymn number 370, All People That on Earth Do Dwell. Marcus is our reader. Marcus not here. No, Charlie.
In June 1922, the Civil War began in Ireland, and on the 6th of December, the new independent state came into existence. Less than a month later than that, on the 4th of January 1923, 100 years ago minus 3 days, an article was written in the Irish Times in what was the women's page. I think it is a plea for kindness, fair play, and I would like to read it to you now. Everyone enjoys a joke, and no one more than woman, even at her own expense. When one comes to think of it, has not woman herself been an unfailing subject for funny stories in every pantomime, every comic paper, and most after-dinner speeches? The fund of jokes has not by any means reached the point of exhaustion yet. Many of them are well merited, many true to life, and others again are redeemed by their inherent wit, but a host are still going the rounds about which something should be said in a quiet way, for they are both unjust and unmerited, so far-fetched in their exaggerations that they are a travesty of the feminine character. And women themselves are, perhaps, too ready to pass these latters over with a generous smile. You know what has been said about giving a dog a bad name. Is it wise, think you, dear women folk, to allow this type of unworthy joke against yourselves to always pass unheeded? It hurts sometimes, and not because it is turned against yourselves, but because of something in it that is really an injustice. Even in wit, there should be a margin left for an element of fair play and a certain kindliness of spirit. For ridicule can be as deadly in effect as a serpent's sting. It can spread wrong ideas in a more potent and telling way than any precept couched in direct and forceful terms could convey. If a simple case in point is needed, the first woman to ride a bicycle in the public street was stoned. She was ostracized by society, denounced from the pulpit, the theme of ribald song, the butt of the ignorant. And yet, what more harmless than the poor bicycle? What more essential to everyday needs? And what has contributed more largely to her present freedom? For it was the happy thought of the bicycle that released her once and for all from the thraldom of the trailing skirt, the tight waist, the embroidery frame, and their natural concomitant, the never-ending doctor's bill. Each stretching of the wings has brought with it the same list of persecutions in a greater or lesser degree: university education, political freedom, the entree to the professions. All alike had to be won in the teeth of the bitterest opposition from the unthinking masses. So public opinion is a force to be reckoned with, and of very much greater concern to women than to men. Every little counts, and no opportunity should be lost for educating the popular mind to a healthier idea, a truer conception of the feminine. A cheap jibe at her sex, no woman should allow to pass without protest in some form or other to the perpetrator. In recent years, the low water level has undoubtedly been raised, but all would benefit by the raising of it a little higher still. But there are jokes and jokes, and some of the best are those centering around woman. Human failings can quite well be made the subject of merriment without hurting if presented in the right way. For example, the old pantomime rhyme: put two old women to two cups of tea, and they will talk of more scandal than ever could be. Put two old men to two glasses of beer, and they will talk of more work than they could do in a year. Another instance in which the sharpness of a thrust was robbed of its hurt by a sheath of wit was provided by the following story. A man called upon to propose a toast to the first and newly admitted lady members of his club expressed his pent-up feelings in the words, "To the ladies, once our superiors, now our equals." Fun, frolic, laughter. This workaday world needs as much as it can get, but the milk of human kindness should be dispensed at the same time with a generous hand. Now, there's a great mystery about this piece to me. It was signed by somebody who simply called herself Lumex. Thank you.
Andy Pollock.
You okay, Charlie?
I'm going to read a piece that Jennifer Flegg read 18 years ago. It's a kind of small tribute to Jennifer as well. Jennifer broke her arm over the Christmas period and is not with her anymore. So this is a little tribute to our wonderful Jennifer. And it's something that a prayer from an old family friend of hers called Dickon in 1938. Please God, give me courage which endureth long, a quiet mind and a contented heart and faith in thy work. Let me help others to be happier and more courageous and full of faith and more able to bear their crosses. Let me help them to see the beauty and wonder and glory of the world as I see it, and to have quiet and contented and peaceful minds too. Thank you for my special friends and for all the cavalcade of people I have met who have enriched my life. Thank you for giving me the power of wonder and worship and appreciation of the glory of the world. Thank you for the sun and the rain, dawn and sunset, the moon and the stars and the blackness of night, the wind in the trees, the mountains and snow, ships, the sea in all its moods, and birds and their ways, animals and green grass and flowers, and the colours after rain, white roads, springy turf and heather. Thank you for books and a fire and exercise and a warm bath, sleep and dream, laughter and laughing faces, lovely faces and fine bodies and beautiful movement of all sorts, for the satisfaction of work well done, and though this comes very seldom, for knowledge and wisdom, which comes slowly, and for experiences which teach me about life and its meanings. Thank you for making me think about the universe and religion in its widest sense, and let me never be bound down by dogmas. Let me always be true to myself, always honest and sincere in thought, word, and deed. Let me be simple and pure in heart. Give me a large sense of humor and make me tolerant and never unjust. Stop me judging others and being critical, and let me never be cruel or sarcastic or hasty in word or deed. Don't let me be petty or mean. Make me adaptable and able to fit into other people's ways and atmospheres without jarrings. Give me dignity in growing old. Don't let me grow fussy or small in mind as I age. Let me be some use in the world, please. Don't let me indulge in self-pity, and don't let me ever become a grumbler. Make me practical without being over-efficient, and allow me always time for dreaming and staring and walking in the country and listening to music and reading and talking and listening to others talking. Give me sound health and let me never be a burden to anyone. Let me always seek to think and find the best in everyone and everything, and give more than I get.
Madeline.
I'm going to read something that's completely nothing to do with Christmas or the season. But these are two pieces that I've heard read and have read a lot at weddings and baptisms. And it occurred to me yesterday when I was doing a wedding that maybe people in the pews for the normal Sunday don't hear them as often. So this is the prophet on marriage and then on children, Khalil Gibran. Then Almitra spoke again and said, "And what of marriage, master?" And he answered, saying, "You were born together, and together you shall be forevermore. You shall be together when the white wings of death scatter your days. Aye, you shall be together even in the silent memory of God. But let there be spaces in your togetherness, and let the winds of the heavens dance between you. Love one another, but make not a bond of love. Let it rather be a moving sea between the shores of your souls. Fill each other's cup, but drink not from one cup.
Give one another of your bread, but eat not from the same loaf. Sing and dance together and be joyous, but let each one of you be alone, even as the strings of a lute are alone, though they quiver with the same music. Give your hearts, but not into each other's keeping, for only the hand of life can contain your hearts. And stand together, yet not too near together, for the pillars of the temple stand apart, and the oak tree and the cypress grow not in each other's shadow. And a woman who held a babe against her bosom said, "Speak to us of children." And he said, "Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but not from you. And though they are with you, yet they belong not to you. You may give them your love, but not your thoughts, for they have their own thoughts. You may house their bodies, but not their souls, for their souls dwell in the house of tomorrow, which you cannot visit, not even in your dreams. You may strive to be like them, but seek not to make them like you, for life goes not backward nor tarries with yesterday. You are the bows from which your children as living arrows are sent forth. The archer sees the mark upon the path of the infinite, and he bends you with his might, that his arrows may go swift and far. Let your bending in the archer's hand be for gladness, for even as he loves the arrow that flies, so he also loves the bow that is stable."
Our last reader is Dennis.
This is an extract from The Bell by John Donne. I have read it once before, but this situation in Ukraine encouraged me to read it again because it's so relevant and probably explains why we have welcomed so many refugees to this country. John Donne was Dean of St. Paul's Cathedral, and he was lying in bed very ill with fever. And of course, in those days, all the diseases like cholera, I mean, it could have been anything. And he thought he was going to die. And he heard every day the bell tolling in the church for a funeral every single day. And this brought about these thoughts on existence and mankind. It's extraordinary that if he stood up in St. Paul's Cathedral and preached this today against Brexit, it would be very relevant after 400 years. It's archaic, of course, and paternalistic. For mankind, womankind is included, but I haven't changed the words at all. All mankind is of one author and is one volume. When one man dies, a chapter is not torn out of the book, but translated into a better language. And every chapter must be so translated. God employs many translators. Some pieces are translated by age, some by sickness, some by war, some by justice, but God's hand is in every translation, and his hand shall bind up all our scattered leaves again for that library where every book shall be open to one another. No man is an island entire in itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod of earth be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less. As well as if a promontory were, as well as if a manor of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I'm involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. it tolls for thee.
We now have a time of prayer, and this will be followed by some time of silence, and Will is going to bring it to an end by playing a piece of music. Let us be quiet without and within. Let the stillness be in us. Let the silence hold us. Let us let go of distractions which plague us and find the deep place of the soul. May we let go of irritation and of fear. In silence, we touch our deepest feelings. In silence, we sense a deeper presence. The spark of divinity that is within each of us and which connects us with all creation. May quiet be in us, may stillness be in us, may the silence of the soul hold and give us peace. Now can we have our third hymn, and it's hymn number 281, O God, Our Help in Ages Past. And at the same time, we're going to have our offertory, and just to say to people that it's also possible to donate to the church online. So our hymn number 281, O God, Our Help in Ages Past. Our notices. Many thanks to all our readers and to our musicians. Thank you for this morning. There's fair trade tea and coffee served downstairs in the Damer Hall. Please join us, that would be lovely. And there are copies of January's Uskult magazine on the table outside. Wednesday lunchtime meditation services available online and in the church between 1:05 and 1:35. And on Wednesday the 4th, the book club meet via Zoom at 7:30. Our final hymn this morning is hymn number 114, Forward Through the Ages, in Unbroken Line. Hymn number 114. Sorry, Josh.